Hello there. I am the Projectionist, and welcome to my sinister Tales of Terror. Surprised you made the trek to visit me this week. That is, a rather nasty snowstorm forming out there, eh? Come, sit by the fire and warm those frigid bones. Let me take that coat for you. The heat of the flames will have you feeling chipper before you know it. Did you have any difficulty on the drive here? Good. I am glad to hear it wasn't hazardous. Although, you shouldn't tarry too long after I'm done with my tale. There can be worse things than snow and ice to contend with around the vault. Especially after dusk. Now then. I will admit that the tale you and those listening to the radio broadcast at home are about to hear was inspired by an electronic missive I received from a fan of our program. John Ives of Coloma, California, asked for me to relate another story, a true one that took place in Haddonfield of past. What with the way the weather has been acting, I believe I picked the perfect story from my tome of sinister tales. Here it is. I call this one Footprints. The winter seasons in Haddonfield were met with equal amounts of dread and celebration. At least, this was the case in the early 1970s. Granted, the children looked forward to school being cancelled from the amount of snow and ice that would clog side streets, with their parents and business owners flinching at the thought of having to travel through it, and the loss of business from the weather. Haddonfield had one snowplow at that time. Many residents believed calling the wheezing machine a snowplow was being generous. It was about as reliable as the man the town had hired to drive it. A drunkard by the name of Brody Coslaw. It was a known, if only whispered fact, that the real reason the man kept his job was twofold. He was the cousin of a prominent city council member, but more importantly, he was a single parent, and his daughter, Carol, a well-liked member of the community, depended on her father's job to help pay for her college tuition. While Brody Coslaw assuredly has his faults, as we all do, his unconditional love for his daughter was without question. Which is why, when his cousin called in the middle of the night to demand he take out the plow and start clearing the streets or else, he hastily agreed as he got dressed, pulling on his battered and patched coveralls. Carol met him in the hallway. In one hand, she carried a large thermos of strong coffee, and in the other, a bagged lunch. "Sorry to have woken you, honey," Brody remarked as he took the second thermos. "I was still up, Daddy," his daughter replied. "I was studying for finals anyway. You know they aren't going to have school tomorrow, right? No matter how much time I spend trying to keep them darned roads cleared. You could relax now and again," he laughed. I know. I was just about to take a break and watch some TV. Carol saw her father to the door, and bade him to be safe with a kiss on the cheek. After locking the front door, she turned towards their small living room. For a moment, she stood in front of the small TV that was situated in front of the sliding doors that looked out on the backyard. The light from the lamps in the living room made the wintry wonderland on the other side of the glass look rather peaceful, the young woman thought to herself. With a contented sigh, she switched on the television set. As the television warmed up, she took a spot on the sofa. The Late Show was airing 1952's High Noon, a film that the young woman found hard to concentrate on. Her attention kept returning to the beauty outside the sliding doors, the winter wonderland. Carol found herself almost in a trance. The light from the living room didn't reach far into the darkness past the sliding doors, but the young woman could tell the snow was beginning to pile up. Carol's thoughts on the weather were shattered as a man came into view. Her mind's eye created an almost camera-like snapshot of the image. This stranger stared at her through the glass. His eyes burned with either madness or hatred towards the young woman. His hands held up as if he was about to grab her. The most notable feature, however, was the fact the man was completely naked. To Carol, taking in all of this information felt like the stretching of eternity. In reality, it was barely a second as she jumped up from the sofa and ran from the living room to her father's bedroom, slamming and locking the door shut. You see, her father kept a loaded shotgun in his closet, which Carol grabbed and pointed shakily at the door with one hand while dialing for the constables on her father's bedroom phone with the other. It didn't take long for the police officers to arrive. Thankfully for the young woman, they had chains on their tires to help them navigate the snowy streets. Carol exited her father's bedroom to find the officers investigating. The two men had been informed of her panicked call. On the television, the late movie had begun and was airing 1962's Carnival of Souls. Miss Coslow, is there any chance you just imagined this man? An officer inquired. No, she replied. I was just wondering, he began, if maybe you dozed off while watching the TV there. I know what I saw. A naked man appeared outside of those sliding doors. There isn't any tracks, though, Mrs. Coslow. Not a one. Carol bit her lip in aggravation. Hey, Bill, said the second officer excitedly. What is it, Andy? Come look at this. The officer walked around the sofa where his partner was standing. He stared down at the floor for a second. Miss Coslow, you hadn't just taken a shower before you saw the intruder, had you? No, sir. Why? Carol asked. The officer looked to his partner and nodded. The young woman was startled when they both drew their service revolvers. Because I'm looking at footprints. Wet footprints leading further into the house. Miss Coslow, you didn't see the man outside, but his reflection in the sliding door glass. He was behind you. Well, now, I hope you enjoyed Footprints. You will be happy to know that the officers found a man hiding in Carol Coslow's bedroom. An escapee from the Smith Grove Sanitarium. I've been told that the young woman fainted when she realized how close she had come to becoming the next victim of the Lambkin Lane Strangler. On the bright side, her father managed to clear the city streets. I want to thank John Ives for contacting me on the Facebooks, requesting such a tale. I hope you shall remember that the iTunes Radio Network is now carrying my broadcast. Yes, now you fanatics of fright can hear my soothing voice all over the world. Remember, if you would like to hear your own scary story read on the air, you can send them to me on my Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. So, listeners, I expect to see you here next week at the same time for more of my sinister tales of terror. This has been a RetroWest production. Sleep well, and goodbye.